Hello, everyone, and welcome to McGill Care's webcast series, Supporting Family and Informal Caregivers. I'm Claire Webster, a former caregiver, certified dementia care consultant, and founder of McGill University's Dementia Education Program. I work with a dynamic team of leading healthcare professionals to oversee the program, who include Dr. José Moret from the Division of Geriatric Medicine, and Dr. Serge Gauthier, Professor Emeritus, formerly of the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging. McGill Cares is supported by the Amelia Saputo Community Outreach for Dementia Care. Today, we have a very important topic, which is fall prevention in normal aging and dementia. My guest is Dr. Gustavo Duque. Dr. Duque is a geriatrician and a clinical and biomedical researcher at the Research Institute of the McGill University Health Center. He is the director of the Rius McGill Center of Excellence for Sustainable Health of Seniors at McGill University and is the Dr. Joseph Kaufman Chair in Geriatric Medicine. Dr. Duque's primary research interests include elucidating the mechanisms and potential new treatments for age-related bone loss, osteoporosis, sarcopenia, osteosarcopenia, and frailty. Dr. Duque will speak about the risk of falls in seniors, including those with dementia, and how to best to prevent them. Welcome to McGill Cares.
Hello, Claire, and thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just reading your bio was like a test for my own communication skills, so I got through it.
You did very well.
So I think I'd like to begin by asking, you know, as a geriatrician, you see many older patients who come into the emergency room as a result of falls and other injuries. So what could you just describe some of the most common injuries that you are seeing among seniors and how they are happening?
I think, Claire, that I would like to start by highlighting that the importance that falls have in the reason to come to emergency department. Falls are the third cause of showing in emergency department by seniors in Canada after infection and delirium. So many of the people who show up in our emergency department they show up after an episode of falling. And it's interesting that 50% of those falls come with an associated injury. And when I say associated injury, it means it could go from any minor bruising into, you know, big hip fractures or head trauma, bleeding. So I think that the profile that we see is a lot of the falls that happen, as I say, about half of them, they show up in the emergency department. You know, they are evaluated. Some of them actually never show up in the emergency department, and they come, they are evaluated. Sometimes we don't find any major trauma, any reason to admit the patient, and we send them back home. 50% of them, in contrast, they suffer some kind of complication, associated trauma, or something that requires admission into the hospital. And I would like to make that differentiation because the approach that usually society and our patients have to those conditions is different, because once they are discharged, you know, somebody shows up, nothing happens. Okay, they are evaluated, they are safe, go back home. Some of them, actually more than 80% of them, never report those episodes to their family physicians. Mm-hmm. Whereas the ones who were, or of course, the ones who were admitted, family physicians are notified. So this is the profile of patients with falls that we see in our emergency departments in Canada.
So, you know, why do we become more at risk of falling as we age? Like, what happens to us?
Well, you know, there are multiple components, and falls are usually the consequence of alterations in two, what we call the two different components or two different elements. One is what we call intrinsic elements, things that happen in our body. The first one, very important, is the way we walk. So with aging, there are very subtle changes in the way we walk, and but we can manage that. In people with some kind of conditions, things such as Parkinson's disease or dementia or any other conditions, this type of walking becomes affected. The second important, very important component is balance. So we are always exposed to challenge and stress to our balance, and probably we don't notice that. If you step in the front of a traffic light and you are going to cross the road and the cars are passing by, we start swaying. And we don't know that, we don't feel it. But when somebody has balance problems, the sway is very wide and could place them at risk of falling over if there is some kind of pushing or changing their conditions. That's the second one, balance. The third one is our muscle strength and our muscle condition. So if our muscles are in good shape, they are able to keep those components, gait and balance, very well coordinated, and therefore, you know, protected against falling. And the other very important intrinsic component is our communication between the brain, our legs, and this kind of crosstalk between those two organs. That happens the whole day because, you know, our feet are constantly informing the brain of, you know, the surface we're walking on, changes, and there are some steps coming up. And then the other one important is the hearing and vision. Sometimes we don't think about hearing loss as a risk factor for falls, but we need all that coordination. The brain coordinates the way or protects us against falls by, you know, getting all these different stimuli and managing them very well and coordinating and integrating them. The other components that I was going to mention is the extrinsic components. And this is important because there are changes in the environment or even in the interventions we have, let's say medications. Medications that drop our blood pressure, that place you at very high risk of falling over, antidepressants. There is a group of medications that predispose us to fall. And the other one is the environmental changes, you know, or environmental factors. You see here in Canada, of course, ice and snow, this is a very important risk factor for falls, but there are many others. You know, we think about where the falls are more common in our patient's house. They usually happen in the kitchen, in the bathroom, or at the garden. And that's interesting. Yes, because those are places that sometimes have lots of different risk factors that predispose our patients to fall.
So can you expand on that? What makes it so that in the garden a person would be more risk of falling? I find it very interesting.
Sudden changes in position could predispose. You know, people feel dizzy when they change positions very suddenly. So people just, you know, go to their knees, pick up something in the, and then stand up, or they have to carry, you know, heavy things that are not, you know, very safe. All the slippery surface, all these are risk factors combined that predispose people to fall in their gardens.
I feel also, and as we age, I mean, I'm talking from a personal standpoint that my confidence level is changing as well. You know, I'm much more hesitant to try things that I would have tried before, whether it be, you know, zip lining or I don't downhill ski, but now I'm in my 50s and I would be afraid to do it because I'm afraid to fall and fracture. So would you also say that as we age, our confidence like changes or decreases?
Yes. And actually that's an interesting point because one of the major risk factors for falls is what we call fear of falling. So fear of falling is a very, very relevant, especially for people who have already suffered a fall. And fear of falling could be very incapacitating. Fear of falling could actually stop people from going out. You know, people who used to go shopping, people who used to have, you know, play bingo in the weekends or whatever. Those patients, unfortunately, after they fall over, they don't feel confident and they are always afraid of falling over. They limit their motivability. They stay at home more often. And of course, they will start getting at a higher risk of falling.
Yeah, and I guess I've seen that also among older people where, you know, I mean, I've even seen cases where people are wearing crampons, which they should during, you know, winter icy months, and they're walking with the walking sticks and they're walking so incredibly slowly because of that fear that despite being well equipped, there is a fear of falling.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's talk about, you alluded before, you know, the vision changes, the hearing changes. So when we talk about a person who suffers from, you know, dementia, for example, what I find a lot of people don't realize is how dementia affects a person's mobility, a person's hearing, and a person's vision, right? So could you expand on that?
Well, definitely. In dementia, we see that this coordination, this connection between the brain, the muscles, the vision, the hearing is affected. It, of course, it varies depending on the type of dementia, the advanced stage of the dementia, or the, you know, other complications or the comorbidities that the patient may have. But what we observe in those patients is that once the brain loses that capacity of connecting all these different dots, I would say all these different components, then the patient is at much higher risk and the response time is delayed. And that's the important thing. You know, when we, sometimes we are at risk of falling over all the time, but our response time is very quick. We don't even perceive it. In people with the cognitive disorders, they cannot have that quick response. Their response is delayed. And that delay is when the episode of falls happen.
So let's talk about at home, what are some of the most hazardous areas? Like, because you mentioned the kitchen, but, you know, for example, you know, I live in a home in the city where I don't have any runners on my stairs. So I'm always holding onto the banister, right? I don't want to go down in socks. But what areas would cause, you know, high risk of falls? So what makes it so that in a bathroom, for example, somebody would fall, or in a kitchen, or in the evening, if you can give some examples?
Well, the most typical, there are several typical examples, you know, slippery surfaces. That's the most, the very, very common one, both in the kitchen or bathrooms. The second one that is very common is trying to reach objects in the kitchen. That's interesting because they try to reach, you know, very high. They place some things that are very high, so they are, you know, hard to reach. The other one I already mentioned about the garden. And interestingly, well, they're usually the physical ones, you know, the carpets, tables, those some coffee tables or side tables that are very small, or somehow they get, you know, they trip on those. But very interesting sometimes, or there are reports that even the pets, you know, pets, they are very nice, they are very friendly, and sometimes they are so friendly that they come too close to the patient. The patient doesn't perceive that the pet is around and they trip over this pet. So this is something that has been any obstacles that are suddenly or appear, or they are not well managed, or they're in the middle of the area where the patient is walking around, that predisposes them to fall over.
And so what would be some strategies to best prevent? I mean, I look at, for example, you know, in a bedroom, you know, when somebody gets out of bed at night, there's a lot of people that don't have nightlights. They have, for instance, slippers or things beside the bed. Like, what would you give as examples of how to best prevent falls?
And that's something I forgot to mention about the lighting. Lighting is important in the house, and you cited that's probably another important risk factor, which is, you know, standing up at night with the, you know, lights off. So night lights are useful. Some people who are on blood pressure medications, coming back to the blood pressure medication, some people have what we call postural drop. So the blood pressure could be controlled when they are measured while the patient is sitting. But if you ask the patient or lying down, but we ask the patient to stand up, that blood pressure drops. This is a very important risk factor for falls in our older persons who are taking blood pressure, who are taking blood pressure medication.
Does it happen more in the evening or in the morning? Like, when would that, is it when somebody suddenly gets out of bed, or could it happen
early in the morning? Early in the morning is very, very common, especially people who stand up, you know, suddenly. Again, it has to be people who are on blood pressure medications and the blood pressure drops. If the blood pressure doesn't drop, it's not a risk factor for falls. Mm-hmm. So the blood pressure medication, if the blood pressure is controlled and it doesn't drop when the patient changes position, is not a risk factor. So in modifications, when we do a false risk assessment, we come back to the risk factor, to the intrinsic and extrinsic factors that I mentioned before. So we have a systematic way of approaching it. where we look at the intrinsic factors and we say, how is the patient walking? How is the balance? How is their vision, the hearing? How is their cognition? What medications is the patient on? What is the nutritional status? That's very important. What is the mood? Is the patient depressed? Depression is a very important risk factor for falls. So we combine all of that and we say, and that's where we come with a multidisciplinary plan. So we involve the dietitian, we involve the occupational therapist, the physiotherapist. For the extrinsic factors, something I always careful to recommend is to make a whole change on how the patient leaves. Because actually it will increase the risk, because you are used to your house. You are used to where your tables are, where your carpets are. So it's actually riskier if we make significant changes. So my recommendation is not to change completely the house, but try to identify where are the really risky components. And as you say, you know, going up or downstairs, some people doesn't have any bars or anything, or even people take a shower and coming out of the shower, especially the bath, you know, coming out of the bath without bars, is very risky for falls.
So when we're talking specifically now about a person living with dementia, you know, when I work with families and I do a lot of also safety assessments, I always ask, you know, what is your home environment? Like, where do you describe the home environment, right? And as soon as I hear that the disease is progressing and there's stairs, I really get nervous, right? Because, you know, and maybe you can elaborate, but I think that people don't realize how dementia really affects a person's spatial visual ability to know how to go up and down the stairs. You know, I remember my mother not even being able to sit down properly in a chair, not be able to get into a car. Even when there were just a couple of steps, she was afraid to go down the steps. So what happens to the person's brain when they have dementia that, like, just navigating how to go up and down stairs, it changes?
Yeah, no, it's an important component. I think that it depends very much on the type of dementia and, as I say, the stage of dementia. But overall, I would say, because the brain loses the capacity to make all these connections, the brain will require longer time to adapt. So if somebody has to go, somebody without dementia goes downstairs, for instance, the brain immediately calculates how many steps is the person going down, how wide the steps are there bars that I can hold my hands? But the problem, and unfortunately, the problem with people with dementia, especially in advanced dementia, is that the brain doesn't make those calculations or make the so the person gets in front of the steps without really preparing to go downstairs, and that predisposes them to fall over. Especially another important component is that some of these patients live alone. They live by themselves. They don't have anybody who could be prompting them or helping them or joining them. And that's even riskier, especially again in patients who have advanced dementia, and even riskier in those types of dementia that affect muscle performance. Mm-hmm. So we see a much more significant muscle and balance and hearing effect from Lewy body disease or some vascular dementia than what we observe in Alzheimer's, because of the, you know, the different components of this type of dementia in the brain.
So, you know, when we look at people who have advanced dementia, certainly those that are in now long-term care, we see many of them in wheelchairs. And, you know, I used to wonder, like, you know, why is that? And I know that with my own experience, my mother, who was once upon a time a very physically active woman, as a result of the dementia, she kept falling. And, you know, at one point she was on a walker, she kept losing her walker, so that wasn't working anymore. And because she had been falling multiple times, I had to make a very difficult decision to remove her mobility by placing her in a wheelchair for her safety. So would you say that that is a common precaution that many family members need to make?
Well, you know, geriatricians were not very friendly with the use of wheelchair. So I think that the last resource Something that, I mean, we talk about the negatives so far, yeah. But I think there are many positives. Mm-hmm. And the many positives is that we have been able to develop guidelines on how to prevent falls. Actually, the international guidelines for falls prevention were developed by a Canadian geriatrician, Dr. Manuel Montero Odasso from University of Western Ontario. They were just published, and I was part of that initiative. I was in charge of the hospital prevention of falls in hospital and prevention of falls in nursing homes. Why I'm mentioning this is that there is a set of, even in nursing homes, there is a set of falls prevention strategies that work. So we don't have to sit down a person in a wheelchair just because the person is at high risk of falling over. There are, you know, interventions. We can have, you know, balance training interventions. We can improve their nutrition. We can treat their depression. We can improve the vision. We can correct their hearing, which is something that people don't think about when we talk about falls risk. We can improve the environment. We have support, exercise programs. All this, all together, this has an impact. We can improve their vitamin D levels, things that will improve their muscle and also their bone health. That's important because we don't only want to prevent falls, but we want to prevent the injuries associated to falls. In this case, fractures. So we all this together can be combined, even in patients with advanced dementia. And don't forget that people in wheelchairs still fall over. And we see a lot of falls from wheelchair. Actually, there is a classification of diseases international, and one of them includes, you know, falling from a wheelchair. So I don't think it's I think this is looking at it from a very multidisciplinary approach, where also the caterers, you know, the patient should be involved, and all the other different, you know, network of support.
So I'd like you to expand on two points, because I understand the correlation between the vision changes and falling, but help me understand the correlation between depression and falling and hearing and falling.
What is the first one? Sorry.
Is the correlation between depression? I'm very intrigued.
Yeah. Well, depression by itself is like all our functions become slower. And there are components that require quick response. So, for instance, attention. Our attention when somebody is depressed, they lose their attention, and we need that to respond to these changes, sudden changes in the environment. Interest. You know, when you walk upstairs, you walk quickly in a good pace. When you are depressed, your interest to perform activities is decreased. So all this affects the response time that I mentioned before. And also, you know, when people are depressed, they eat less, they perform less physical activity. So all this together will increase the risk of falling. For the hearing loss, it's interesting because hearing is an important component of balance as well. We have balance, and we need to know with our hearing, we need to know if you know, the sounds can also regulate the way we walk. If we are going to cross, again, coming back to the example of the pets, we can hear well, we can hear our pet coming or somebody coming, approaching you, or an object or a car. So this is an important, combines control of balance and control of the environment. And those elements are important, as I mentioned before, for the risk of falling.
Okay, so my last question would be, so what would be some of the best type of physical activity that we could do to strengthen our muscles and you know, reduce our risk of falls, you know, as we age?
Well, in terms of exercise, it's important that we do, there are two components that are essential. Strength, so exercise that improve our muscle strength, our muscle power. So it depends also on the person, you know, the age and the condition, but it's an important component, essential that we do a strength exercise. And the second very important is balance exercise. So there is a set of balance exercises. There are many websites that provide that information and examples of exercise that can be done at home. For instance, you mentioned Professor José Moret. José has a, Dr. Moret has a, what they call SAFE.
SAFE Seniors, SAFE Seniors exactly, program.
SAFE Seniors yes. program, which is fantastic because
which it provides- is available on our website for those people watching. We have it on our website.
So that's a clear example of exercises that are, can be performed safely at home that could have an impact on both balance and strength. Mm-hmm. Strength alone doesn't improve necessarily balance and vice versa. So we have to, we should perform a combined approach of balance and strength exercises. Important that the regularity of the exercise should be at least twice a week. And for a duration of at least 30 minutes at every session. So in order to become effective, walking around, taking a walk every day, walking your dog is very good for your cardiovascular health, but unfortunately is not very effective on preventing falls and fractures. So we need something a little bit stronger and safe. SAFE Seniors, for instance, is a very good alternative.
And the McGill University Dementia Education Program, we have also an amazing dementia companion book that has all kinds of tips for each room in the house, which will ensure that people know, you know, gives tips in terms of how to prevent falls. We go room by room. So I encourage everybody to go to mcgill.ca/dementia and, you know, obtain a copy, either download it for free or purchase a copy from Amazon, that you have in all kinds of tips on how to prevent falls also in that guide. Dr. Duque, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me this morning. Really great, appreciate your expertise in this area and look forward to hoping to have you back again as a guest one day.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Claire, for inviting me.
Thank you. So this webcast is an initiative of the McGill University Dementia Education Program, which is funded by private donations. The McGill Dementia Education Program offers a comprehensive range of free resources to educate and support persons living with dementia, family and informal caregivers, healthcare professionals, medical students, and the public at large. Once again, have a look at the Dementia Companion Guide. It is now available in 8 different languages, which with many more to come. If you would like to make a contribution to our program or for more information, please visit us at mcgill.ca/dementia. And if you would like to join our mailing list to find out about upcoming episodes of McGill Cares, as well as other important program initiatives, please email us at dementia@mcgill.ca. Thank you for watching.